The House Committee on Education order for meeting on Friday, March 9th, 2007. Members, good to see all of you. It's been a while since we had a Friday meeting. I noticed several of you were confused about what room we're in. The state of Oregon is obviously in good hands. We have a couple bills to hear today. And without hesitation, I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2675. Mr. Olson, would you be so kind? Give me a summary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2675 changes the date of the district's refusal to renew a contract for probationary teacher from April 1st to March 15th. Applies to contracts renewed on or after the effective date of the Act. Committee members, you have the updated preliminary staff measure summary before you. This was heard and sent to the full with a due pass recommendation by the Education Innovation Subcommittee on March 1st. And I believe Representative Wisnant might have a few words for the committee before we discuss it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The subcommittee heard this bill. It was presented by Mrs. Jessica Burley, Representative Burley's daughter. And it's a family affair because the person that brought this bill forward and noticed the problem with dates was Linda Burley, who was a school teacher and assistant principal in Bend. And she was attending the University of Oregon Education Administrative Law class and found out they had the March the 15th date April the 1st is what was being used to notify teachers that were on probation, whether they were going to be accepted or not. So we discussed this in subcommittee. It was voted out unanimously. Also, OSBA spoke to the bill and said that they supported it. In fact, they had been, in practice, had been using March 15th for their date that they notified people, because that's when they also notified the regular teachers. And they thought it was a good bill. That was the right thing to do. The earlier notification you gave people and whether they were going to have a job or not would better. So we supported a good bill.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Administrator, do you have a copy that I can look at, please?
Yes. Of the bill or the...
The bill.
Yes.
I'm going to give Representative Green a little bit of moment to look at the bill. Any further discussion? Representative Green?
Yeah, I just, it is a very difficult thing as an administrator to have these conversations. Generally, there's been a lot of stuff going up to it, but I will tell you that it has always been frustrating that there would be a date like April 1st for that particular announcement to give to somebody, because it is truly not a laughing matter, and I am pleased to see this moving to the 15th.
I appreciate that, Representative. Representative Preble?
My question is, and I don't know if anybody knows the answer to this, but has it always been April 1st?
I might answer that question. We had contract teachers at March 15th, and I'm not sure why we moved to April 1st. I looked to Arnie and Betty as two principals that implemented the law. I don't know how that got in there, because every school I know has always been March 15th. And I think there was a movement at one time to give the non-tenured teachers, or to give the school district more time, to do the numbers of staff that have to be done. In some schools, it's done by the superintendent. And that would give them, if they had new teachers, more time to work with that. If I think right, this is about 1995, 1996, somewhere in there. But I don't think anybody ever went to the April 1st date that I know. I'm going to tell you how it is. This conversation is difficult at best. This conversation is held long before you tell somebody that they're terminated. Everybody pretty much knows what the score up on the wall is. So in answer to your question, Representative Cremel, I know that the relief for the movement to April 1st came in the late 90s. The notion was that a district could split, do the tenured staff on one date and the non-tenured on another date, but in reality, it never worked that way.
Okay, I was just wondering, because 100 years ago when I worked for the Portland Schools, first moving to Oregon, March 15th was the date.
Yeah,
and that was the date in practice. I don't know if it was state law or not, and I was curious as to if it's always been April 1st, but that's fine.
I do remember when it was. No, it was when there was a bill in this session, and it was to eliminate tenure. And I think this fell out of that as part of it. And 97, 98 session.
There have been discussions, and I don't know if it's on this particular bill, with regard to whether, when does tenure begin? And some people said that March 15th was the date that it began because you had to give notice before that. Other attorneys will tell you, no, it doesn't take place until the end of the full year. And therefore, you can still do things like not have to have some of the same requirements if you're going to non-renew for reason a probationary teacher up to the end of the year. And so all of these discussions got wrapped into that at a time about let's make sure that people realize there is a difference between the two groups. And as I remember, that was part of the whole decision. But it really doesn't make any sense because everybody in practice recognizes
March 15th.
Okay. In my opinion, anyway.
Members, we are in a work session, and I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion that we send House Bill 2675 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dahlin moves House Bill 2675 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor will say aye when the committee assistant calls the roll. All those opposed will say nay. Will you please call the roll?
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Dahlin?
Aye.
Representative Greenwood?
Aye.
Representative Comp?
Aye.
Representative Fummel?
Aye.
Representative Lim?
Aye.
Representative Hogan?
Aye.
Representative Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Buckley?
Aye.
The motion carries. What's that?
My concern, calendar.
Representative Burley's daughter brought this, and I was going to let if Representative Burley wished to carry the bill, we'll give him that offer. If he doesn't, we'll deal with it at that point. All right. So I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2675 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2729. Mr. Olson, would you be so kind?
Can I ask you a question? For my edification as a committee chair, this had public hearings in the subcommittee, is that right?
That's correct.
So we wouldn't necessarily have needed a public hearing here.
No, well, he's referring to the previous bill.
But yeah. No, the one right now.
This actually is a different bill now. Was it made a different numbered bill? Different names on top of this.
If we had heard it in this country, we would not have had it really.
That's correct.
Did somebody hijack this bill?
Yes. Some of your closest and most beloved colleagues.
My goodness, look at that. Roblin, Dallum, wow. Greenwick, even. Hard to imagine, isn't it?
Imagine this.
If you can at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2729 is very similar to, but a little different from House Bill 2245. It allows the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to establish programs to provide mentoring and resources that help students access education and training beyond high school, establishes access to the ASPIRE program, which stands for Access to Student Assistance Programs in Reach of Everyone, and it establishes the program fund, and it continuously appropriates money in the fund to commission for the program. It declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. Mr. Chair, a couple notes. One is that we have a Dash 1 amendment, which is before you. The Dash 1 amendment deletes language placing appropriated funds in the ASPIRE program fund, but continuing to allow money from donations and grants to be placed in the fund. This came out because Ways and Means philosophically opposes the state agencies placing appropriated money in special accounts to draw interest to the agency rather than the general treasury, and suggested this amendment. And my understanding is OSAC is supportive of this amendment. That's one note. Secondly, after that change, and given the fact that this is already an existing program, and LFO has decided there is no fiscal impact, the Ways and Means Committee again suggested that we recommend to the Speaker rescinding the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. The committee chair did so, and the Speaker approved that, and so if this were to pass out of the committee, it could be done with a recommendation to rescind the subsequent referral. I hope that makes sense to everybody. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. We have some public testimony on this bill. Dennis Johnson and Vicki, I can't read your last name. I'm sorry.
I forgot the courtesy of offering my colleagues the opportunity to testify on the bill, the chief sponsors of the bill.
I have a question, Chair.
Representative Crum.
Have you put a time limit on her testimony?
Please do.
Since there are a limited number of people in the room, Representative Clem will have only 5 minutes to introduce each one of them as a close personal friend.
Sure.
That's true. Thank you, gentlemen.
It is really a pleasure to speak this bill. My name is Arnie Roblin. I'm the representative from District 9 in the Coos Bay to Florence area. Last session, this is one of the bills that I introduced, along with another representative who's no longer here, Representative March. And it met an untimely death last session, didn't get through the committee, didn't actually get a hearing. And so it is really exciting for me to be here today to talk about this. I got involved a number of years ago, just after Aspire had begun. It was a couple years later in our school. Applied once and then applied again and was one of those schools that was accepted. And I will tell you, and you're going to hear from Vicki Merkel a little later, I have never been more impressed with the planning and the work that went into the formation of Aspire. The training documents to be able to train local volunteers to come into a school and understand their responsibility and what they're supposed to do, and with that responsibility to know where their limits are, what they shouldn't do. Everything was spelled out for these people, and the training was exceptional. I have never seen better training. And those then trained members of the community sat down on a regular basis with students at our school and helped them through the complex maze that has become the financing of college education for kids today. We went from a school who has the opportunity to get Ford Foundation grants, which allow students to go to school, especially when there is poverty and other issues in the island. A number of you know that Southern Oregon has that opportunity. And we went from barely ever having a student get accepted to having multiple students accepted every year. And I contend it was entirely because the students had someone who was sitting there with them and understood the process and shared with parents how to get that process. You know, we went to everybody going online and filling out their FAFSA and the federal aid forms. We went to having a cadre of people from our community, from business owners, walk into our school on a daily and weekly basis to meet with kids and show them that they cared about it, even though they had no other reason to be there. And from that has developed other schools that came on. We got to be a part of that. I was on the board for a while. Felt very, very privileged to be there. It became a moral issue with me with regard to why do kids at Marshfield High School have this opportunity and kids in other schools don't. And that began to frustrate me. And the more I got here, when I got here, it was clearly a major frustration to understand that it could only grow because of the outside private donations. There wasn't any structure in our state to do it. And I believe every child in Oregon should have the opportunity to be involved in this program, and that's what this begins to do and say that it's that important. My daughter took advantage of it. I watched that relationship with her, and I kind of knew the system, and I knew it better because I went through some of the training. But I will tell you that your own child listens better to someone else sitting there talking to them than they do to you oftentimes. But have some other adult there, it is very, very nice for that to happen. And so I've watched her, because of those experiences, take the opportunities that have presented themselves to her through college and go off and do things in Europe, and she's going to Australia this summer. And I am convinced that it is that opportunity to sit down with something and mentor them through and, you know, hold their hand as they're writing these letters and doing those things that gave her the feeling of confidence that, hey, it's not all that bad. You just sit down and make a plan and work the plan and you can get there. And so from my perspective, there is no better program to help students in our schools in Oregon move from being a high school student, Christian, to being a college student. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Representative Roebuck. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian Clem, representative from Salem area here, District 21. And I just wanted to talk about two elements of the program that are really important. And for those of you who haven't heard, you know, me go off and on about my past life, I was chair of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, which houses this program. And I had nothing to do with inventing or founding this. I was able to come onto the commission once it was going, and it was such a proud program to have within our agency because it does so many good things in so many communities, and it can do so many good things in so many more. But it was always a source of difficulty for me as the chair of the commission to not be able to explain to the foundations, Ford, and you'll hear from Randy Choi from the Oregon Community Foundation, why we couldn't get the state to sort of even admit it existed in statute. And it's, you know, the legislature's busy, it's doing other things, but, you know, other entities are pouring millions of dollars into this program to have it succeed and thrive all over Oregon, and I just wanted to get it in statute a few sessions ago. Now we actually have a shot at getting it some general fund to expand into more high schools to get it. Representative Roebuck's point of why only some places and not others. So today, finally, we're going to get started on, at a bare minimum, this bill does not appropriate the money. It places in statute this program that's been in existence for several years, has flourished and thrived due to you know, largely the hard work of Vicki Merkel, who you hear from, and her team of people who helped build this program, and advisors like Representative Roebuck, and we'll get a chance to finally admit this program exists and love this program by placing it into our laws. You know, personally, I obviously went to Marshfield High School, same programs that Representative Roebuck was talking about. It didn't exist at that time. My mom was a counselor at that high school originally, and she had, like most counselors, you know, hundreds of kids that were her caseload. She didn't really have a chance to talk to them about college because she was talking about their personal lives and problems. Then, as Representative Roebuck knows, my mother became the work experience coordinator. So her whole job was to help kids think about work if they weren't going to go to college, which most people in Coos Bay at that time didn't feel like we were going to go to college, or think about going to college. And she had this little computer terminal, I remember, in her office that would be, if you wanted to go to college, you'd go and type what kind of parameters you wanted. Well, I was her son. I didn't take the pre-SAT, and I didn't fill out all the applications for scholarships. And my mom was the one who ran the program because she was busy. And that's the deal. Counselors and teachers and parents, they're really busy just putting food on the table and teaching classrooms and dealing with, you know, math and all kinds of larger issues that the average counselor is dealing with. And I don't know, later, eventually, when I got to OSU, I applied for a few of the OSAC scholarships because I saw them at the OSU financial aid office, and I got them. But I didn't, and not that I would have qualified for any kind of national merit scholarship, but that's part of the pre-SAT, is it qualifies you for scholarships. People don't know, even when their parents are the ones who do it for a living. And so this program has been so great. I've heard so many stories at OSAC from the people involved in the advisory groups and kids who came through, and they talked about, I guess, one kid from, I think, Jefferson High School, and he was definitely not going to college, and now is, and if maybe it's finished even already. It's just phenomenal, and I really commend this bill to you because, I'm not going to ask you for the money right here. I know not all of you are on Ways and Means, but it does honor the fact that this program has been such a success, and we want to see it become law. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Tom, did you have a question?
Yeah, I'm going to let you dig this out a little bit more, Representative Roebuck or Clem. I'm looking at line 9 and asking if we should have an amendment that says, and I'll read line 9 to you, and I'll take it from the beginning. Financial aid and educational training programs beyond high school to students in all Oregon secondary schools. Should there be a word all in there? And why wouldn't we put that word in there?
When it says Oregon high schools, my understanding is that it is implicit that it's all, we could put it in, though that would take the time to go back and put another amendment.
I don't want to take that time, but you did look at...
My understanding is that it allows it for all Oregon high schools.
My question started with, can I be assured that a student in Fossil, a student in Spray, will have access to Aspire?
But what I can tell you is, in each of those cases, you have to have a volunteer base that's willing, and a school that is willing to support having those parents come into the deal. We don't force anyone to become an Aspire school. In the past, they've always had to apply. There's been a rigorous deal, and as far as the money went. So it's, I think over time, the state's going to have to own to this deal and decide, do we want to put some more money in it besides just the money that's coming in foundations and so on, if we want to cover every school. This gives us the opportunity to start going in that direction. But my personal belief, if they would go and visit any of these schools, including some very small schools, and they can talk to you about that later, that are making it work, they would get into the program, because in those schools like Fossil, there are professional people in those communities who would love to help, in my opinion, get in there and do that. But without having someone come in and do the training, and they've used AmeriCorps, a whole bunch of other sources to get more people, on the ground in those places. And they have regional directors that work with those people, and the goal is that they would eventually all get there. And I would be remiss if I didn't say, one of my legislative assistant this time, Liz, who, if you come by, is one of those Ford Family Foundation scholarship recipients, and went through this whole Aspire program and continues to connect with her Aspire person. So, it is one of those things that builds lifelong partnerships that does them things as well. And I think it does just as much for that community member, oftentimes, as it does for the other.
One last question was for you. Did you see that other puffball question that Ernie gave me?
Yeah.
Any other questions, members?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenlick.
Please. Did I hear you say that this was not going to have a fiscal with it?
Yes, that's for this particular bill. That's why we no joint ways and means referral, because it doesn't appropriate the money. I also forgot to mention my testifying that my high school principal also didn't tell me about some of those scholarships and or things. I'm not sure why.
You didn't like them.
In 1990, when he graduated, it was my first year as a principal, and I had a difficult time understanding all of the paperwork that was involved in all the scholarship. The fact is, it was shortly thereafter that we started seeing the books. If you have not ever investigated scholarships, you need to do that sometime. The number of them is unbelievable. Without computers today, I do not think that it would ever work. But there are scholarships out there that direct, if your family member was from this particular part of Scotland in this particular year, you probably qualify. And it sits there waiting for someone to know that it's there. And there are amazing numbers of scholarships and qualifications that are very specific. And finding, getting someone to dig into who are you, where do you come from, what do you want to do, and that, kind of, what do you want to know that? Well, look over here at this scholarship. Oh, yeah, maybe if I put all that stuff in and it searches, it will find something. It gives students the tools to start doing that on their own. And some of the volunteers go off and do that too. So, it's really interesting to see.
I think www.getcollegefunds.org. It's a handy tool for your constituents. www.getcollegefunds, and then it's electronic, and you can answer the questions, and it'll filter you. So the one I got was because my dad had been a veteran. And that was the criteria. A parent or grandparent, veteran, and I think a certain grade point. Maria C. Jackson, General George A. White Scholarship. It was, I'm very thankful to them, obviously.
But so many of the people whose parents didn't go to college themselves don't even know where to start looking.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't mean to sort of spoil the attitude here, but I have a question. You mentioned that there's not a fiscal on this because it's an existing program. First of all, it's currently not in the statutes.
Correct.
So it's not an existing program. It may be existing within OSAC, but it's not an existing program within the statute. The other thing is that under the background of the SMS, it says a governor's budget of $1.4 million for Aspire, which is included in the OSAC budget bill, will enable expansion from the current level of 84 schools and 39,000 students to an estimated 150 schools and 71,000 students. See, that to me sounds like a fiscal. And so I have a hard time with this not having a fiscal when, and you could say, well, it's in the governor's recommended budget. And if that's the case, then what we should do is just bring the governor's recommended budget right to the floor and let's just pass it and we can be out of here by the middle of March.
That's a good
idea. You know, but that's not, we can in the legislature even more by abdicating our responsibility to the governor. So while I appreciate the fact that it's in the governor's recommended budget, and while I appreciate the fact that it's in the OSAC budget, it does in fact have a fiscal impact because we're talking about taking $1.4 million from somewhere, I don't know where, but from somewhere to put into this program. I absolutely support the program, but I think that it is absolutely a misnomer, Mr. Chair, to say it has no fiscal impact.
If I might, Mr. Chair, it's a totally fair point. That number will be in a different bill, and we'll have the chance to vote that bill down if you're on that committee. This bill, and let me explain why it's important that we do this bill, in my opinion, whether we do the other bill or not, that's the budget bill. The scholarship provider, the community foundation you hear from, it's important to them for the millions they've invested to see this program not just reside at OSAC in administrative rule, but actually be in the state statute, even if no money is provided in another bill. They've invested millions of dollars to set this up, and they would like to see the state say this program is going to exist in state law, so it would take legislative action to remove it rather than just agency action to remove it, even if the other bill, the budget bill, does not pass. They would like to see the program exist and create the account to take additional private donations for it, even if we are unable to do general fund. So that's why we really didn't want the general fund in this bill, so we could have that conversation about the value of the program in statute, even if we can't get the general fund.
I was going to say the same thing. If this bill passes, we have in statute Aspire, and that it is part of OSAC. If it does not pass, we don't have it, and the budget would have to be changed to take it out because there would be no place to put that money. So we will have a bill to talk about it, and from my perspective, I hope that bill passes because I think it's appropriate, but I understand the ways and means process, and not everything that's in that budget necessarily ends up the same way. But we still need to have the vessel for which to put that stuff into when those budget bills come to us.
I find it interesting, Mr. Chair, that in previous sessions, bills like this ended up in Ways and Means simply because there was, and especially when there was a statement like that in the SMS. The other question that I have, then, is that with regards to the amendments, and I assume that you're supporting the amendments, I'm not sure I can support the amendment, Mr. Chair, and the reason why is because that suggests to me, then, that what we're going to do is force OSAC and force the Treasurer's Office to segregate out the money. The other thing is that by doing that, and maybe that's what relieves the fiscal impact, is that when you take the appropriations out of this, then first of all, like I said, the Treasury is then going to have to segregate money that's been appropriated and money that comes in from donations and grants credited to the Aspire program and make sure that they're separate so that one side can get invested to make money and the other side can't. That doesn't make sense to me. That's not an efficient way to run things. The other thing is, by taking the appropriations out, then what we're saying is that there's not going to be any appropriations for this program. That's what it tells me. So, quite frankly, I would not support the amendment of taking the term appropriations out of this for those reasons. Maybe somebody can convince me that we should, but I can't. And then my last question is, with regards to the volunteers, do the volunteers need to go through the background check information so that we know that that our volunteers in this program that are working with kids?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that was one of the things that was probably singularly stood up more. I had never seen the training that was done on this program to make sure they understood their responsibilities and what they were walking into as a volunteer. I mean, we have a lot of volunteers, and having sat on the Rules Committee and others and found out that, and I've always known this, that when you volunteer, you become an agent for the state, and all of these ethics and other things apply. Well, this program explicitly explains that to people and makes sure that they understand it. We also have LFO here who can answer some of the questions with respect to your other issues.
But they do go through
that. They do go through that training, and they understand.
Okay.
And they go background checks in every school.
Yes, schools do background check for the volunteers. Our agent for OSAC does it for the employee, who's the paid person.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And they are one-on-one with kids. It is required by our law. So. Yeah.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Representatives, for bringing forward this bill.
The other question we didn't answer, but Steve Bender from Legislative Fiscal is here to talk about the whole segregation of funds, if you did want to cover that.
We can bring Ms. Bender up after our other witnesses.
Yeah, be glad to.
Thanks. Good gentlemen, thank you so much for your
time.
Thank you
both.
All.
I know that signing on is a controversial book.
I want to testify.
Neither the first nor the last time, Representative Beeman. At this point, let's listen to Dennis Johnson and Vicki Merkel, the creators.
And I have some more questions.
The hosts.
No, no.
It's wrong for John Sarah Marjorie.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us.
That's this one.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margie Lau. I'm the I'm a policy advisor for Office of the Governor.
And we missed this one. That's appropriate.
In the interest of the committee's previous concerns about what happened to the other bill, I would like to start off by saying that the governor's office heartily endorses this bill. It looks a lot like another bill that we were really interested in. And there's some kind of saying about a winner having multiple parents. I think we just have a lot of parents in the room. This bill establishes this fire program in statute. It's a program that has existed for almost a decade at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. It really grew up under the wise stewardship of Vicki Merkel and many others who have come before us. And it existed under the broader statutory authority of the Student Assistance Commission. Otherwise, agencies wouldn't be allowed to operate. They have to look at what the broader establishing authority is of an agency when new initiatives are begun. But unfortunately, because of the state's resource situation, it was started and has been maintained all these many years with the philanthropy of some wise people elsewhere in the state. And we're fortunately at a point in the state's history where I think we have a confluence of recognition that we have the resources available, and post-secondary education and aspirations for our young people have never been more important. And because of that, we have both this piece of legislation in conjunction with the resources that are included in the governor's recommended budget and the appropriation bill for the Student Assistance Commission, so that for the first time there will be a direct general fund appropriation, we hope, and the Student Assistance Commission budget for the 2007-2009 biennium. I want to speak to the program's wider relationship to the rest of the education endeavor that we're supporting in this legislative session. The Aspire program does many things to raise the achievements of our young people in Oregon. You've probably heard from the folks at the Department of Education about the work that they're doing to improve the amount of knowledge that a student has as they leave high school. Part of how you achieve that is you give students a reason to know why they should do that. And the Aspire program and its volunteers really help provide that bridge of information. So the students know if I do well here and I earn credits and I take harder classes, that it's not just torturing myself, but I'm actually going to get something because of it. And, you know, I like some of our previous speakers, I have a couple of college students in my household as well, and you, students generally don't do things that they consider to be torture without there being a good motivation reason.
Some boring things.
Yes. In addition to that, we've got other initiatives in the governor's recommended budget where we're trying to provide better financial assistance to students. We certainly hope that the Student Assistance Commission will use its small army of volunteers to help train students and families about what we would like to change the Oregon Opportunity Grant program under the shared responsibility model to help them achieve. They'll be an important conduit of that information so that, you know, as we're proposing, this year's juniors will know next year sometime how to go about that process of recognizing their shared responsibility and achieving the resources there. In addition to that, we're hoping to have an increase in enrollment in our community college system and our Oregon University system. And we want more students to be in those systems because it's really important, not just to those students, but to our state as a whole, that we have more students finishing advanced education. That's good for all of us, especially those of us who are baby boomers who are hoping there will be very able and capable people to follow behind us. So for that reason, we heartily endorse the Aspire program as it's existed and as we hope it to expand to 150 schools in the next biennium and eventually to every school in the state that is interested and can support it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dennis Johnson, Executive Director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And as Representative Clem indicated, it's a pleasure to speak on this program. It is one of the gems in our agency, certainly. Whenever I need an uplift, cheering up or something, I can go right next door and talk to Vicki Merkel about the early days of the Aspire program. I can go to this map, which very nearly, the one that you have in front of you, very nearly reflects maybe the population density of Oregon. Certainly, if you don't know Oregon, you wonder a little bit about the blank areas, and there are certainly no intentional omission here, but the 82 schools now that you see reflected here grew from a tiny core group of four. They weren't just random, Vicki tells me. They were pretty carefully chosen because of their diversity, not just geographic diversity, but because of the ethnic and the socioeconomic diversity of the schools and of the regions they represented, starting in Pendleton and then Marshall High School and then Reedsport High School in North Valley. That's a really diverse group of four Oregon high schools. You've got inner city, you've got rural in kind of a more isolated geographic area of the state, coastal, down in Grants Pass. You've got a very different kind of environment with each one. This program didn't just start randomly. In other words, it started by design and by very careful design with lots of trial and error. People over the years have determined what works and what doesn't work. As Representative Baldwin mentioned, it changes high school cultures, and that's what's exciting about this. So it affects individual students and their families, their lives, certainly. It changes the culture in high schools as well. We'll talk just a little bit about that, but I wanted to mention, to address some concerns that came up here a few moments ago. First of all, it is our intention in future years, as in past years, we open up the application process whenever we have openings for more high schools to the entire state. And then there has been a competition process. There would still have to be a competition process, even with the introduction of general funds. We're in 82 high schools now. Can we expand within the next biennium to 150? You bet. We have the capability. We have the staff. We have the programming. We have the training. We know how to do this. As I said, there was some trial and error. We know what works, what doesn't work, and what to steer away from. So this kind of measured growth is certainly attainable. But imagine the number of students we can help. We'll get to that in a moment, too. So the fact that that word all isn't in there doesn't concern us at all. The fact that the word appropriation or appropriated funds would be taken out doesn't concern us, or in fact it recognizes what we do. We work with outside funds all the time. We have general funds and other funds. We have private funds that we administer as scholarships. We have hundreds of thousands of dollars that come in grants to support programs like Aspire, to support outreach efforts around the state. So we're well used to separating out general funds from other funds or from private funds that come in, accounting for them separately, and explaining even portions of positions back at our agency, 50% from one source, 50% from another. Not an unusual thing for us. We certainly can do that. We can do that with the smallest award, with a staff position, or with a whole program. We do it all the time. Part of this program is supported by AmeriCorps, a federal program, not state funds, but federal program. We rely on, and we have for another 2 years, funding from the AmeriCorps grant. That's about 28 to 30 of the high schools in this group of 82 right now. Those representatives come out of that federal program. So we know how to handle the accounting. We certainly like the idea that there wouldn't have to be a referral to Ways and Means, but we do want you to know we stand ready. We will go anywhere, anytime to talk about this program to try to tell people how good it is and how much benefit it can bring to Oregon. The second page that you have just kind of shows briefly where we think we can take this program with these general funds in the next 2 years. So 39,000 some students served now. We can reach more than 71,000 in the next biennium altogether. That's impressive any way you look at it, I think. And the third one talks about volunteers. We've heard just a little bit about it. We could wax on about this all afternoon about how we know it makes a difference in lives. But partly it's this volunteer-driven effort that changes the culture in a high school, getting all these role models, professional people in many, many cases, in contact with students, raising their levels of expectation, and getting them farther than they would have gone without it.
Was it Crum?
Pardon me. I was hoping the questions would come after Vicki got home.
Specific to this slide.
Well, it's specific to this slide. I mean, I am extremely impressed that you get the president to endorse this. Oh, that's that's George W. and Aspire.
What's your name? Georgia.
Georgia.
Oh, it's Georgia W. Now, see, even there, I was reading it as George W. and I thought, you know, to get the president's endorsement is pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. It's important to read every letter there.
Representative Buckley. Chair Buckley, Representative Kummel, we would have chosen a different name. No one knows. No one has pointed that out before. I would have done Gina Webber, president, anticipated that one. But
it's been a long week.
Basically, you're hearing from somebody who is a late convert to the program. I haven't known about this program for more than a year and a half or so. The one who's really responsible, the one whose baby this was, she brought it along and has brought it to this point of readiness to not just take its first steps, but really take off running now, is Vicki Merkel. So I'd like her to take off with a far more accurate and complete description than anything I could give you.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Vicki Merkel, and I work at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. I came to the commission in the fall of 1998 when I was hired to design and implement the Aspire program, and I'd like to thank the state of Oregon really for the privilege of doing so. My background is in volunteer administration. I now sort of hide out as someone who knows a little bit about financial aid as well, but I actually worked in social services for several decades. And what I know from that experience is that those students are those families families who are low income and need the services from agencies such as the Department of Human Resources are often the same families that we're trying to reach through Aspire. It's a small state. They're the same low income families. And this is such a positive way to make change in people's lives. And it was truly a pleasure to be hired, given a 3-page initiative project paper from the Oregon Community Foundation, and be able to sit and think through all of the issues about implementing a volunteer program in high schools. And there have been many, many people who helped me along the way, including, for example, Representative Roblin, who became our role model for high school principal and how they could enhance the delivery system in our high school. He was at every training. He recognized the volunteers. He gave Aspire parking permit passes for parking spaces in front of a high school. If you've ever tried to park in front of a high school, that's like gold. Being part of an innovative agency like OSAC, and I would like to acknowledge also Representative Clem and his service on the commission, being an out-of-the-box thinker is not something unusual at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. Many programs have been incubated there, including the Ford Family Scholar Program that was mentioned several times that was first administered at OSAC. So it's really been a pleasure. But it was not surprising to me that this program would work, because in my decades of designing volunteer programs, this seemed like a winner to me. Like, people would come and volunteer, and what I'd like to do is take a moment and talk about the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who come forward to work one-on-one with teenagers. As Dennis mentioned, one of the first schools was Reedsport High School on the coast. And I went to do a training session there. I'm sitting in the room, talking to a couple of volunteers beforehand, and we're just chatting, and I haven't really quite figured out who's going to come and volunteer here yet. Obviously, parents are a natural, although, as Representative Roblin pointed out, not a good idea to try and advise your own child. We don't recommend that. And this one gentleman says, "I'm sorry, I'm in my overalls. I was on the way to the dump. I stopped by here for training." And I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'm a busy guy. And we're talking a little bit, and he mentions he's retired. And I said, "Where have you retired from?" And he said, "Well, I was an engineer for NASA." And I'm going, okay, I'm in Reedsport, Oregon. I have a NASA engineer who wants to volunteer for this brand new program that no one's ever tried before. And I'm pretty impressed. And I'm talking to the other lady there, and I don't know people from this community. I've just dropped in. And she's in what I would call soccer mom clothes, the kind of clothes I wear when I go to soccer games, a little vest, cords, and we're chatting. And we're both of us share the experience that our parents were first-generation Americans. So we're talking about what that's like. And I turn to her, and I say, "And did you go to college?" "I don't know who she is." She said, "Yes." She said, "Yes. I went to college, and then I went to Harvard Medical School." And I'm thinking, okay, I knew this program could probably draw good volunteers. I didn't know how. And that has continued to astonish me over and over and over. And remember, I have several decades of experience. I think one time I counted, I'd interviewed over 4,000 volunteers in my past life at the Department of Human Services. I also have an email here that I'd like to read an excerpt from. This is from a gentleman, David Lang, and he's married to Vicki Lang. They're a retired couple in Pendleton, Oregon, and Pendleton was also one of our first schools. The program was under the wing of the high school counselor, and it frankly didn't take off very well, not because the counselor didn't have an interest, but because they didn't have time. When the AmeriCorps program came into being, we hired Vicki Lang as an AmeriCorps member. She's a retired career counselor. You may think of AmeriCorps members as 22-year-olds. Not always. As a matter of fact, probably at least half of our members are from the local community and have ranged up into people in their 70s. Vicki was retired. She did a two-year stint with AmeriCorps as the Aspire coordinator. And then guess who followed her? Her husband. So they're quite a team. And they volunteer. Actually, now I believe they receive a small stipend that covers their insurance for coordinating their medical insurance. For coordinating the Aspire program. And Mr. Lang wrote to me, "We think Aspire is so much more than advising students. Several years ago, when adults walked into the halls of our school, you received stares because it was so uncommon to have adults present unless you were a substitute teacher or something dealing with sports. Partly because of Aspire, volunteers moving about every day, the whole climate has changed. Adults feel more welcome, and students interact much more readily. Students even bring their parents during school, and it's completely okay. Community goodwill increases every year. Volunteers learn about the inner workings of our school and relay this to their friends. And I've heard this over and over. It's creating systemic change in the schools as well, as which Representative Roebling alluded to. When you bring community members into the school, they see firsthand what's going on with the high caseloads for counselors, lack of facilities. They become advocates for the school. I could probably take, you know, several hours and continue to talk about Aspire, but I won't. Again, I thank you for the privilege, and as a first-generation college attender, I know that these programs make a difference, not just for the student, but also for our family. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Questions?
Suzanne Clem. This is, may not be an easy one. This is going to be a surprise. This is for Vicki. We heard some testimony from talented and gifted parents about the boredom factor for their kids in school, that they're dropping out because they don't have, you know, enough challenge, basically. And we had another gentleman who came and testified in front of this committee at the end of that hearing, and he had been working in the schools just on his own as sort of a mentor for kids like that. I think he taught for 40 years and now is retired, but he really wanted to get a mentoring program going of some kind. And without paying you a royalty fee, we actually now as a committee, I think, have all signed on to a bill that would create a thing called MOTAG, which is Mentoring Oregon's Talented and Gifted. And I think we maybe stole some of the Aspire language and model. But I'm wondering, do you think it can be replicated for something like that, where, again, we're trying to figure out how to get volunteers in to work with, you know, kids who are, in this case, pretty needy of attention because they're quite talented and gifted, and we're worried about losing them. And we're trying to figure out a way, since their counselors and their teachers can't keep up, to do it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clem, absolutely a mentoring program can be replicated. I mentioned my background, and I think you probably, if you knew the programs I'd worked on before, you'd see a lot of similarities in mentoring programs. I directed a senior companion program. I've developed mentoring programs for at-risk children, teenagers, mentally ill adults. There are certain characteristics that go into a mentoring program, beginning with a good position description for the volunteers so they understand specifically what's expected, those risk management parameters for the receiving entity of the volunteers, all those things can be replicated. With the kind of program that you're speaking about, I think there's also an opportunity to piggyback with the Aspire training so that those students are not only getting the attention they need in school, but you can piggyback and help them see why it's important to work at the level that they're at the hardest they can, because there's a payoff down the road and there's a continuation. And sometimes high school students, I think, well, it's natural. They don't really quite see that far into the future. And Aspire's been very open to sharing our materials. We have a little copyright. We want to know who's using them, but we're very happy to share them.
Call Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clem?
Just, Dennis, if you see the caller ID come up and it's my phone, I might be asking to borrow Vicki, her brain on this mentoring program, because it's something that we heard people are dropping out of school and then they're leaving the state to go to college. And I also am guessing that, to some extent, Aspire, though we don't necessarily steer them to Oregon schools, we do provide them with a lot more resources, probably about OUS and independent college programs, because they give us a lot more information. Maybe more people stay in Oregon to go to college if they go through Aspire than not. Though I doubt we have studies on that. But.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, we don't have that data. It's certainly data that we can get, and we will have a public hearing on Monday with Ways and Means. One of the people who's done quite a bit of research for us on the history of Aspire and following up on Aspire students will be there presenting. I don't think she has gotten into that aspect. It's not hard to get. It's something certainly we can design into performance measures, and we'd have to be value neutral on that, I guess, until the governor's office tells us, no, we want to push Oregon schools over all other opportunities. Right now, I think it's probably a natural effect, though. Couldn't do anything other than give you an hypothesis about the numbers who stay in state and go out state.
And, Mr. Chair, I do not want to have the agency have to do more work for me. I've been on the other side of that coin, so please don't have a legislator running you off on a study that doesn't need to be done. I just would like to borrow her brain sometimes on MOTAG.
Thank you for that clarification.
But it was a
Glenn. That's a real one.
Yeah, two things. One's a comment, and one's
extend that comment to Representative Klum. Right now, as I watched Aspire work, it does work really well with that group of students that are the tag kid who may not be finding his way at school, because not only, you know, when you look at scholarships and look at information, what they also point out is there are other things you can do besides academic right here in school today, and we want you to do well there, but you also need to build up a resume of stuff outside of school. And so they do connect people oftentimes to say, you know, you have this interest, whether it's computers or whatever, you know, you need to build that into your resume as you're setting off to go to college, to show people you're doing other things. And they give some credence to kids' other interests and explain to them that just what you do in high school, though that's important, is just one aspect of what you're going to be presenting to when you do college scholarships. So there's already an part of what they do that influences kids to do that. And the other one I had to say is that, you know, having worked in schools for 32 years, and I've told this to Vicki before and she gets embarrassed about it, but the reality is I have never seen a program as complete and well thought out as Aspire was from the beginning. And that is Vicki Merkel, so it's a wise choice. We had a number of people in our school who were not excited about Aspire coming. And the whole idea of these people would know more than we do, I mean, there's a lot of turf things everywhere. And every question they came up with as a concern was already addressed. I mean, it was pretty remarkable how complete, and we were a couple of years into the program before we got started, but how complete and thoughtful all of the things were to make sure that they took care of those concerns that happened. And so I would tell anyone out there who is trying to do any kind of volunteer program, just because you have a good idea, that doesn't mean it's going to work. And there are people who professionally understand that, and Vicki is the best I've worked with in my 32 years, so I want to commend her for that too. So thank you.
We talked about, I want to go through the numbers a bit. You're presently serving 82 schools. You could add 68. That brings us to just a little under half of the schools in Oregon. And I would not want to be party to layering this on, I don't think. But do you have enough applicants? The first question is, with or without the appropriation word in the bill, do you have enough money to serve the 68 new applicants? You talk about growing the program another 250 schools. You will do that whether anything happens today, tomorrow, or the next day in the legislature?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the program has been growing at a slow pace because it's been dependent upon private funds. It can only advance to 150 schools with a general fund infusion. Is that the question?
You did answer. The word appropriation should stay in the bill.
I'm not the right person to answer that.
That's just, Mr. Chair, Representative Thelen, the word appropriation, my understanding of the requirement or the reason it's best to take it out of the bill is, again, just so that we ensure that segregation of funds. So
and then you get established in law.
Not merged with outside private funds that we raise. So that's strictly an accounting kind of thing. If there is no general funding for this program, but it is established in statute, we will continue to be as aggressive as we can about raising outside private funds to further this. We will not be able to get to 150 high schools over the next biennium. I assure you, in fact, it will be hard to grow much beyond our current level. It isn't that the foundations are tapped out, but the outside donors who established this program kind of feel it's time for someone else to step up. It's quite normal for private donors to try to get things started, to provide seed money, a pilot fund, if you were. Well, after 8 years or more, it's not a pilot fund anymore, a pilot project anymore. We've proven that it works. They'd like to see the state establish it in statute, and I'm speaking for them, of course. I don't mean to do that. I just mean to say it would be very difficult for us to find other donors to replace the ones that have provided such generosity.
We will be hearing from a private donor in just a moment, and we also, Mr. Bender will come up and talk about the issue of appropriations in just a few moments as well.
Then I would, one follow-up, do you have, we can wait for Mr. Bender and then call you back, or I can ask you now, if you were to be funded at the governor's level, do you have the applications the schools applying to go to 150? Would those slots immediately be filled?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dallin, my enthusiastic Aspire staff are right now planning a very aggressive campaign, informational campaign, that will be run statewide with both regional meetings and going to such groups as school district principals meetings. Caddy McEwen is our interim Aspire program manager, and Caddy is out of Coos Bay as well, and was first assigned the task to recruit schools to the Southern Oregon region. There were no stars in Southern Oregon, maybe one or two, and the Ford Family Foundation made that a requirement of that grant. She's the best person we have to go forward and recruit statewide. Caddy has been an Aspire advisor. She's been a coordinator at the school. She's also been a school board chair and very active in her community. And she tells me, no problem. We will be able to recruit the schools. Now, we do require an application process, and we do that because we want to help the school understand what they need to be ready to succeed. So we ask a series of questions so we can determine and help them see the sorts of tools and things that they need in place, like a site for the volunteers to set and work with students, internet connection, that sort of thing. So we're confident that we can get there to 150 schools in the next biennium.
Thank you. Then one last question, and it's a geography question. There's a hole in the map. I live in that hole.
I'm not sure if it's a question or a comment.
Will you be filling the hole?
Got to do our best. Vicki, just to let you know, the superintendent of my high school, he usually gives long, elaborate answers to any question I ask. He's very detail-oriented. When I asked her her thoughts on whether we should expand the Aspire, screamed through the telephone, yes, that's all she said. So thank you so much for your work. Thanks for being here with us today. Really appreciate it. Randy Choi.
You're so lonely now.
I'm confident you can fill the space, Mr. Jordan.
Okay. Chairman Buckley, members of the committee, my name is Randy Choi, and I'm the Program Officer for Education at the Oregon Community Foundation, the state's largest charitable organization. On behalf of the Oregon Community Foundation, I want to take this opportunity to express our strong support and my own personal support for the official state recognition of this very successful Aspire program. Providing access to post-secondary education for Oregon students is one of the top priorities, most important priorities for the Oregon Community Foundation. The foundation has over 270 individual scholarship funds. To put that into context, we have over 1,200 individual funds that were created by individuals, businesses, and organizations, and families. We disperse approximately $2.6 million in scholarships, connecting the philanthropy of our many donors statewide with over 1,500 Oregon students every year. Our focus on providing more access to more students is evident in our significant financial support of this program, a program that the Oregon Community Foundation helped start, helped create 9 years ago, along with our great partners, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. Aspire continues to see significant growth in the numbers of students in the program, the number of community volunteers, and certainly you see the projected growth of the schools if they are funded appropriately to 150 schools. Aspire provides the foundation's scholarship program with a more inclusive and a more diverse applicant pool, and frankly, many of our donors are asking for a more inclusive and more diverse applicant pool, and it's been very successful in that regard.
Aspire also greatly supports our efforts to help underserved and underrepresented students statewide, although we hope to get into that hole, Representative Allen, as best we can. And Aspire helps the foundation build community support to encourage students to be successful beyond high school, especially those students who don't see themselves as college material. So we want to help encourage that. The Oregon Community Foundation is very proud of this program, and we believe it will continue to grow and have a significant impact, not only on the students and families, but certainly communities throughout the entire state of Oregon. We feel it is now time, you heard a little bit from Dennis, but we feel it is now time for the state to step forward in a major way and support the Aspire program by placing the program in statute and by providing enough funding to expand the program to at least 150 schools over the next biennium. It is now time to invest, for the state to invest in Aspire to build its credibility, build its visibility, and certainly build its long-term sustainability. That is why we encourage you to support House Bill 2729, and we do as well. So thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Choi.
Members?
Representative Clint.
I just, before Randy goes, would like to thank both the foundation and Greg, but Randy personally as well. He has provided not just in the Aspire program, but a lot of personal investment in the agency, its other programs and products and scholarships. There's unique partnerships in this agency with the Community Foundation that don't exist probably in many other agencies in Oregon or in the country for that matter, where we have figured out ways that we can administer and find the kind of folks that they're looking to award, and they can help manage some of the funds that come in that we're really too small to manage at OSAC. And it's a partnership that's been working well. Clearly, they believe in investing in OSAC, but they've spent a lot of time helping the agency be successful, so then the State General Fund didn't have to, which we all like that a lot. And the Community Foundation is just something that does a lot of good things in Oregon, but I just wanted to highlight what you've done in the higher ed arena. And I thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Any questions? We thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your work, and thank you for the work of your.
My pleasure, gentlemen.
Thank you,
Steve Bender. Thank you for your patience, Mr. Bender, and thank you for being here to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I am Steve Bender with the Legislative Fiscal Office, and I was listening in my office to your deliberations and heard that there were some questions about the fiscal impact of the bill, and would be happy to answer any questions you have about that. I would, though, want to clarify one thing, if I could, Mr. Chair, and that is I know there's some concern about the amendment to remove the term appropriations in template locations from that bill. And I do want to clarify that this in no way would limit or affect the ability of the legislature to appropriate general fund for this program. The bill itself, as it comes to you, either with or without the Dash 1 amendments, does not appropriate any general fund for the program. But the language that concerns Ways and Means is language that would take any general fund that you did appropriate, put it in a fund, and then let the interest on that money not go back to the general fund. This is a violation. Well, it's not a violation. It's a change of our current practice. And to put it succinctly, when you heard the revenue forecast last week, that assumed, at least theoretically, that interest earnings would be going to the general fund. If you pass the bill without the Dash 1s, we would technically need to adjust the revenue forecast down because that interest wouldn't go there. And that's the only concern we had with Ways and Means. Otherwise, we believe if you approve the Dash 1s, there will be no fiscal impact, and therefore we very much appreciate, Mr. Chair, the courtesy you've shown by allowing this amendment to come forward, and we would appreciate this committee approving it, because then the bill would not have to come to Ways and Means, and it would just expedite the process. We would be working on a bill that had no fiscal impact, which doesn't make too much sense for Ways and Means to do.
Thanks, Bender. Representative
Representative Dahl.
Stephen, and I do want to go beyond this a bit because I have some concerns. Let's pass this bill out of here and get it the way you want it. And now we're going to come to Ways and Means, and if we have 150 schools that are eligible, what's, is it normal and customary then for the legislator to set up through the Department of Ed a grant process where schools apply, and is that how we would do it? I'm tackling how to get
a process built in it.
So we would give the money to the Stern Assistant Corporation, and then they would set up a granting process. I'm out of your realm again.
They have the grant process already, or the application process. There's some people on the waiting list already, probably, and then we would go out and solicit people to use the 10-year-old process we already have set up, and then start awarding them. Not that you asked me that question, Colleen.
It's nice to have an expert on both sides of me here.
Representative Clem assists at no extra charge.
I think I understand that. And then I have some questions, Stephen. I might need legislative counsel rather than. But how does this affect equity? I'm very enamored with this program, but I'm very concerned when we can't make it available. I don't want to mandate it, but when we can't make it available to every school that wants it. And I'd like to know what the figures are to do that, because if a school were to apply for this and be told no, then what we've said to some Oregon students, you get a program, and to others we've said you don't. And that does trouble me. Or we've said to a school that can fill out forms very well, you get a program, and to a school that can't, which might be Fossil and Spray, you don't. You can dig a question out of there. I'd much appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, members, the reason why we believe that the bill would not have a fiscal impact if you dealt with that little interest issue is that the bill does not require the state to provide Aspire services to every school in the state. It says that the Oregon Student Assistance Commission may establish this program, and it doesn't say at what level it needs to be operated. Typically, if you do have further questions, I would suggest that you get someone from council, but state agencies are not allowed to do anything unless they can point to a statute that shows them authorization, that grants them authorization to do this. There are presumably other statutes for OSAC that allow them to do this, but this clarifies that this particular program would be a program of the state, that the state operates from its Student Assistance Commission. But it does not indicate what level of service needs to be provided to any particular school, or it does not indicate how many schools need to receive services. So the state would be able to, I believe if the process were reasonable for determining which schools receive the funding, there wouldn't be any requirement under this law that every school be served. In other words, I don't believe a school could come and sue if they didn't receive Aspire services if this bill were passed.
Thank you.
Where's that coming?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve, I'm real curious because the way I read subsection 6 of section 3 on page 2, starting in line 32, is that it's setting up establishing a separate and distinct fund from the general fund known as the Aspire program. But then it says just monies received from donations and grants, if we take out the word appropriation, shall be credited to this Aspire program fund.
Yes.
What that tells me is that there cannot be any appropriations to, without the word appropriations in there can't be any appropriations to the Aspire program.
What this amendment would do is it wouldn't allow appropriations to go into that fund, you could still appropriate money to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission for the Aspire program. However, the fund, the appropriation would not go into a separate fund, which is typically what happens when you appropriate money from the Department of Education or whatever. It doesn't go into a particular fund. It just is spent as general fund. So that would occur for the Aspire program. Again, the only effect of the Dash 1 amendment would be because the general fund was not put into this Aspire fund, the interest earnings would accrue to the general fund. So if it's $1 million and it would earn, you know, $50,000 in interest, well, $50,000 goes to the general fund. And as a very technical matter, in Ways and Means, if you passed it without the Dash 1 amendments, and we gave, and then you did appropriate, say, $1 million in general fund, we'd have to then add $1 million in other funds, too, because it would be the general fund going into the other fund, and then it's being spent as other funds. I know that's a little bit more detail than you probably wanted, but that's why, without the Dash 1s, we would put a fiscal impact on this to notify Ways and Means that if this bill passes, Ways and Means better make some adjustments in the budget for it's not going to work right. They won't be able to spend the money.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative?
Well, that's one of the things that I have a concern about, because in our SMS it says that the governor's budget of $1.4 million for Aspire, which is included in the OSAC budget, would enable the expansion. So, basically, by taking the word appropriations out of this, what we're going to do is we're going to make a policy determination with no appropriations and without really considering the cost. Correct?
The reason why we asked this committee to consider this amendment is because the co-chairs have asked, there are a number of bills this session that are taking that would, if passed, allow interest earnings on general fund monies to not accrue to the general fund and to accrue to other sources or to be maintained for particular programs. And the co-chairs are very concerned about this. They want to preserve the revenue sources for the general fund that we've historically had. And my expectation is that if you allowed this bill, if you did not rescind the referral to Ways and Means, and it came to Ways and Means, I very strongly suspect that the co-chairs would not agree to schedule this bill without an amendment to take out the interest earnings to the general fund. But that does not in any way, this is not a decision on how much or if any general fund to appropriate for this program. We would almost consider it a technical fix. It's slightly more than technical, but it's really just dealing with the interest earnings issue and not the funding otherwise of the program.
Mr. Chair? I got Representative Rublin, Representative Comp, and Representative Unick one? Okay.
I'm okay.
Yeah,
well, what I would share is what Steve has said. I sit on Judiciary, and we had several of those exact bills come to Judiciary from DOJ. That was the intent of the entire bill, was to say, we want this appropriation so we can spend the interest. Mm-hmm. And it's an appreciable amount that would be lost then out of general fund. And so I was wondering if the alarm bells weren't going to go off in Ways and Means, depending upon how many.
They would have.
Yeah, they would immediately, because it would become an incremental huge loss if we're setting this precedent.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was a little confused by the exchange a moment ago with the claim that we're making a policy here that has a fiscal attached to it. It's usually a problem, seems to me, when we pass a bill that implements a program that must be implemented and has fiscal consequences for implementing it. My understanding in this bill is we're not making a policy decision that has any fiscal implication to it. Is that right? I mean,
you are.
This right. Isn't policy.
With the Dash 1 amendments, without the Dash 1 amendments, there is the fiscal policy. There's a fiscal implication regarding the fact that we have to take some interest earnings out of the general fund.
And the purpose of this bill, as I understand it, is completely independent of whether Ways and Means ultimately decides to fund some money to it or not money
correct.
To it.
Correct.
So they may fund it this time, they may not fund it this time, or they may fund it never.
Correct.
And this bill doesn't require any Ways and Means funding in order to do what it's intended to do.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative Klim. I just wondered if... Oh, no, this is just a public hearing, not a work session.
This is just a public hearing.
No, actually, I've been waiting 6 years to get myself here and Mr. Bender there, because it's always the other way around. I have no question for him. I can't think of a single thing.
You'd ask him how it's doing. Any other questions for Mr. Bender?
I do have a question, Mr. Chairman. So, Steve, if we take the... We're in essence going to bury the cost of the program in the OSAC budget. I mean, that's bottom line what we're going to do. We're going to bury the cost of it in there. Where will the performance measures for the program be addressed, and where is the accountability for the program?
Representative Crumble, Mr. Chair, members, Ways and Means is looking at performance measures for all programs that are being funded in the budget, and that includes programs that do not receive general fund. In the event that this program, that the legislature does not approve general fund for this program, there would still be donations and grants that would be spent on the program, and because of that, there will still be performance measures relating to this particular program. I must admit that right now, my memory doesn't serve me very well, and I don't know what specific performance measures the agency has relating to Aspire, but maybe some of the agency people who are here do have that. But Ways and Means is approving performance measures proposing performance measures for approval to the full body with each budget.
Thank you. I know that we're not in discussion, but I would encourage folks to please take into consideration, we have been in front of the legislature at least two sessions asking to just put it in statute. We didn't even have a general fund request those years because I had personal conversations with the president of the Ford Family Foundation and with folks at the OCF saying, thank you for giving us millions of dollars. It does mean something to the state. It's an administrative rule. They said, how do administrative rules change? I said, they can be changed somewhat easily. They felt a lot more comfortable if it was in statute, so they would know the money they're investing can't be diluted by rule. And I always made my personal commitment. I was just a volunteer, so I don't know how much that was worth, but I said, we will try and come to the legislature and get this program set in statute so you can feel better about the investment. So it really is a long-standing, actually, attempt to place it in statute. And yes, there is a general fund appropriation this time, but this isn't the first time we've actually come just on the statutory question. It's really about the foundation support and trying to honor the investments they've made. I, of course, want the budget passed too, but it's not an attempt on behalf of the agency to get 2 and 1. It really is two distinct things, and it's been that way for a number of years.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions for Mr. Bender?
Representative Lynn. Thank you very much. There is no question that this Aspire program is one of the best programs in our state. I don't think anyone can dispute that. But I'm just curious how much... I know this is mostly run by the volunteers, but I want to find out how much actually is costing to run the program, administrative cost. Could we get some information about it? Or do we have it already? I haven't looked it up yet.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we could get you that information in the fiscal office. I didn't bring that with me. I don't know if the agency might have you with them now. I don't know. But we can certainly get you that information.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, you wish
Mr. Chair, for the record, Margie Lau again, Office of the Governor. The current resources in total in the budget for the current biennium is $1,431,000, other funds. So that would be the resources that are coming into the agency from the AmeriCorps grants, the Oregon Community Foundation, and the Ford Family Foundation.
I believe Representative Lynn's question had to do with the administration, though, of
yes,
the program.
Yes, exactly how much it's going to cost to run the administrational cost.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, the governor's budget includes another $1.4 million to expand the program to the additional high schools. There's also been some loss of funds from the AmeriCorps grant. Again, this is a federal resource that comes to the agency through another state agency, hence it's recorded as other funds. But those resources are declining. And so part of our resources are going to be replacing some of that effort there as well.
There might be some confusion. Representative Robin just mentioned, he said that the cost of the program is the administration of the program itself, since it's a volunteer program. Are we looking at per school, I'm just trying to get the information that you...
Not necessarily per school, but do you spend any money to run this program? It's a strictly volunteer program. 100% of the funding goes to the school.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, there are four staff people who are employees of the agency, and they help coordinate the recruitment of all of the AmeriCorps volunteers who are coordinators at many of the school sites. Those are funded through the AmeriCorps grant. Those funds that we mentioned are these foundation dollars that are paying the salaries of those four employees. Now, there's some administration that is behind the scenes because somebody has to take care of the payroll and the accounting transactions, those sorts of things, and that is borne by the rest of the agency's budget, but it would be very minimal because Mr. Bender does a very good job.
Mr. Chair, one way that I kind of piece this together is I look at the $1.4 million, and that was 05-07, wasn't it?
Yes.
And then I go and I look at the 1,144 volunteers leveraged. Mm-hmm. So $1.4 million to get $1,000 a head. So for $1,000 per staff person out there, we get 40,000 students served for $1.4 million, which that's not much money per head. I don't know the math, but that's how I kind of think about it. Number of volunteers leveraged, number of students served at $1.4 million as the administration sort of for the whole thing.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Thank you, any other questions for Mr. Bender?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crabble.
Is this, Steve, is this listed as a policy option package?
What is listed as a policy option package, sir, is the general fund addition to the package, yes, to the program. It's a policy option package.
And then, if I may, Mr. Chair, so they're showing... I don't know what the total budget for the agency is, but they're going to show $1.4 million in general fund as revenues coming in, and then are they showing $1.4 million in expenses to administer the program then as part of that policy option package?
The policy option package would be, I think it does total up to about $1.4 million general fund, both as revenues and as expenditures.
And is it enumerated out what those expenditures are going to cover?
What would be enumerated out are the portion of those expenditures that would be used to finance the costs of agency personnel, finance the costs of other agency expenses and services and supplies, and also finance payments to high schools for their costs.
Do you know the bill number off the top of your head?
Is it 5044? Oh, I'm sorry.
5044.
House Bill 5044, which is the budget bill for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask Steve a question?
And that, so we have 1.4 that's in existence now because of monies we use on behalf other funds, I guess, monies we use behind, and then the request, I think, is for $1.5 million on top of that, because those would still exist to underwrite the things we have. So it ends up being like a $3 million budget, some other fund, some general fund, if the policy option package were to pass.
Essentially, Representative Clem, you're correct, except that, as Ms. Lau mentioned, some of the AmeriCorps funds are not going to be available next biennium, so the total will not be the full amount, and that's no in the governor's budget.
Just an example to put it in context, the last time I was principal, which is the end of 06, I don't know, before the last session. Anyway, our budget for 560 students was $4 million.
Wow.
Okay. Does that help you put it in perspective?
It did for me, Representative Cobb.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bender, thank you so much for your time. Great.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming over and helping us.
Thank you, Mr.
Eby. Is there anyone else who wishes to offer testimony on House Bill 2729? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2729 and open up a work session on House Bill 2729. I would be interested in hearing a motion for the Dash 1 amendment.
I will move that we pass House Measure. First Amendment. I move we approve the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2729.
Representative Roblin moves the Dash 1 amendment. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Well, I have great respect for Mr. Bender and his abilities and the ways and means process and everything. I'm concerned about removing the word appropriations in the two places in the bill that the Dash 1 amendments would do that. I'm also concerned about this bill not going to ways and means, but and I understand that by taking the word appropriations out, we can in fact avoid the bill going to ways and means. So consequently, because there is, by putting this into the statute, there is going to be a cost, and I think that cost needs to be recognized, but be it as it may. But so I'm going to oppose the Dash 1 amendments and leave it there.
Thank you, Representative. We'll do a roll call vote to acknowledge that. Any other discussion?
I'm gonna speak in support of the amendments. I would love to have the general fund interest stay in this account, but I know that I will be kicked off of Ways and Means if I did something like that. So I'm gonna have to support them.
There are kind of secret rules for Ways and Means.
Yeah. We don't cross the co-chairs like that.
Very good. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor will vote aye. All those opposed will vote no. Will the committee assistant please call the roll?
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Dahlin?
Aye.
Representative Greenlick?
Aye.
Representative Kropp?
Aye.
Representative Kremel?
No.
Representative Lem?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Wisner?
Aye.
Chair Buckley?
Aye. Motion carries. Do I have a motion to move House Bill 2729 to the floor that do pass as amended recommendation?
Do I have a rescission there?
Or do we need the rescission?
We need the
rescission. That's right. Mr. Chair, I move HB 2729 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Rescission
of the subsequent Ways and Means referral.
Representative Clem has moved House Bill 2729 recommendation of the rescission of the movement to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
As amended.
I'm good to. Representative Clem moves House Bill 2729 to the floor, but do pass as amended recommendation, removing the referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Gravel.
Thank you. You saw that one coming. I think that what we're doing here, and I have to state that I don't agree with. I absolutely agree with the policy of this bill, but I absolutely disagree with our action, basically making separate decisions, one considering the policy and the other considering the cost, and never the twain shall meet. And I have a very large concern about that, because what we're going to start doing then is, by taking words like appropriations out of rules like this, we're basically not going to recognize that the program has a cost. And the other thing that we're going to be doing then is that we're going to have programs like this in state statute, but we're not going to be recognizing what the cost is. We're not going to recognize that there is a fiscal impact, and that there is, and what the expectations for the program really are. I think that we will then be allowing the cost of programs, and it's not going to happen just with this one. It's going to happen with others coming down the pike. And what's going to happen is that we're going to be allowing the cost of the program to be buried in the agencies, and we'll never really figure out and know where the money for the state is being spent. The other thing is that then if the agency doesn't care to put out performance measures for this, and if Ways and Means doesn't pick up on it, then it never happens, and then the accountability for the program goes away. That to me is not transparency in government. We are taking away transparency in government by burying these kinds of things into the agency budgets. This is going to be $1.4 million buried in the agency budget that we are not going to have any idea of where it's going. So for that reason, I'm going to vote for the bill. But I am also going to make these same comments and statements on the floor of the House, because I think it's absolutely important that this body understand, if we're trying to get the transparency in government, this kind of action doesn't get us there.
I appreciate your comments, Representative. I see the process as slightly different. I do have confidence in the Ways and Means process to set the standards for the expenditure of money and to make that process transparent for the citizens of the state of Oregon. We're setting a policy here as befits the Education Committee. For the discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Lim. In my opinion, taking out the appropriation from the two places is more comfortable for me.
Mm-hmm.
In this bill, when it says appropriation, that we are acting as in Ways and Means. So this is a policy body, and then taking out this gives me more a comfortable position to vote for this bill, House Bill 2729. This is a good bill. I share some concerns Representative Cromer mentioned, no question about it. And sometimes I have seen some strange things happening during this session, that because a certain amount in the governor's budget, we don't have to go to Ways and Means. During my sixth session as a legislator, some criteria has been $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's $1 million or $1.5 or whatever. Since this is in the governor's budget, we don't have to go to Ways and Means. This is something strange. So I just put that record and my opinion in it. But for this bill, I'm willing to support it.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? See no further discussion. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. Will the committee assist, please?
Representative
Flynn?
Aye.
Oh,
Representative
Dahl?
Aye.
Yeah. Representative
Greenland?
Aye.
Representative Kopp?
Aye.
Representative Kummel?
Aye.
Representative Lim?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Griffith?
Aye.
Chair Buckley?
Aye. The motion carries. Representative Roedland, would you and your former high school student care to carry this bill?
I would appreciate that.
Representative Flynn, is that all right with you?
You know, actually, if it's okay with Representative Roedland, I would be happy to save my OSAC time for the shared responsibility model that I am going to work like a dog to make law.
We will give you that motivation, Representative
Roedland.
Representative
Roedland,
you're on your own if that's
okay.
All right with you.
You should. On your own, buddy. I'll work with Representative Crummel, so we'll make sure all his concerns at least get addressed on the floor.
Okay, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2729. And if there's anything else, members?
Seeing none, I'm going to close this committee hearing for this afternoon. Thank you very much for your work today.